Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 12:59 p.m. and today is November 16th. Well, Moderna came out with some very encouraging news on their vaccine today, and the share responded admirably. What was particularly interesting is not so much that the efficacy rate was so impressive, but rather that they don't need to have it at sub-zero temperatures for nearly as long as Pfizer. And having surged on the upside last week, Pfizer gave up most of the advance by today. Well, what looks increasingly likely is that we're going to see a number of these vaccines approved, and that there could quite easily be oversupply by the time we get around to people actually getting injections. So that, of course, raises the question whether the easy money has been made in these companies. I think the bigger picture here is to pay attention to the wider biotechnology sector, because what we've seen over the last year has been a proof of concept. The mRNA solutions that are being pioneered by both Pfizer and Moderna have never really been used before, but they do represent cutting-edge technology that's been under development for at least 20 years. We should also remember that the first human genome wasn't sequenced until 2003, so we're still in virgin territory in terms of genetics and its role in the global economy. And the biotech index continues to consolidate in a first step above the base manner, above that almost 5-year range. And this continues to look like a recovery scenario overall, because there is clear potential for additional applications of this technology, and most particularly in the fields of oncology, which is where it's been concentrated so far. But there are plenty of other potential applications out there. But the much, I think, more important point is that with the potential for a significant number of vaccine candidates being approved in the not so distant future, then that's really positive for the global economy, and we could quite easily be looking at a period of synchronized global economic expansion in 2021. And the S&P 500 pushed on to another closing high in here today. It's not quite at a new high overall because of that downward blast we had last Monday, but it does look like increasingly that we are going to push on for another leg higher. The Nasdaq has been leading on the upside, but it did not push on to new high ground yet in here today. One thing that I think is quite interesting is that if we look at the advanced decline line for the Nasdaq, it's been going sideways now for approximately 6 months. So the running has in the technology sector has been done by the big cap companies, and the underperformance of the Nasdaq relative to the S&P, or indeed to the Dow Jones right now, that represents the slowdown in the performance of the mega cap shares. But it was a point that I think Leon Tuohy made, was that when we look at the really long-term chart of the advanced decline line for the Nasdaq, well, we're presented with a base formation that's been underway now for 11 years. Well, what that begins to suggest is that perhaps we are exiting the period where the majority of returns have been concentrated among a very small number of companies. One thing that I thought was rather interesting today was this chart, which was, I think, rather instructive about the concentration of returns in a small number of companies. So we can certainly see that since about 2014, there has been a very concerted trend of outperformance by five companies, and it has greatly exceeded the concentration at the peak in 2000. Now, if we then think about, for example, the Russell 2000, it's a small cap index, and it's at new recovery, excuse me, it's at new all-time highs, and it has been consolidating for 2 years. So it's now outperforming the Nasdaq 100. When we then think about, for example, the mid-cap index in the USA, it's also outperforming the Nasdaq 100. It potentially suggests that we're going to have more of a concentration in small to mid-cap companies. Well, a good part of the reason for that might be because of a return to synchronized global economic expansion, but also the fact that we have got low interest rates. Now, 10-year Treasury yields are about 90 basis points, and we're higher in here today. It would be tempting to think that this rising yield environment is a response to wider inflationary pressures. But it may simply be because the stock market is pushing on to new high ground and it is pulling in cash that had been parked in treasuries, and that quite the same need for a safe haven is not as profound today as it was about 6 months ago. So there is the potential here that we do see yields push on higher. But then the bigger question is, how high can yields go? Because on the one hand, if we look at what the likely spending plans are for the US government next year, well, with a hung parliament, or the equivalent of a hung parliament, it's going to be rather difficult to push through aggressive spending plans. But even then, it's likely that there will be a deficit in excess of about 2 trillion. The Fed will probably buy a good portion of that, but it may limit the amount of supply that's coming into the market. Without additional surges in supply, that may help to contain yields. And then, of course, there is the very clear scope that the Federal Reserve will continue to try and mitigate the rise in the yield curve. It's continuing to hold the spread at least around 72 basis points. It has not pulled back yet below the 70 basis point level, but it isn't surging higher yet either. So we potentially have an environment where we may not have quite the same need for a safe haven asset. And that's one of the reasons why gold prices have been rather quiet over the course of the last few days. Now, gold was well off its lows in here today because even though there might not be an immediate still need for a safe haven, the reality is that there is no prospect of deficits disappearing. There is no prospect of any real determination by governments to try and raise taxes. The one thing that they might try to do is to enforce taxation, or at least the rules of taxation, such as they exist at present, and try and raise money that way. But it's very unlikely that that's going to plug the hole that's been created this year. But one thing that is weighing on gold, and one of the reasons why it hasn't rallied more abruptly recently, has been the fact that ETF buying has moderated significantly over the last 6 weeks. So there isn't quite the same demand for gold as there was in the period up from January through to just quite recently. But that doesn't mean that we're in a bear market. Far from it. It just simply means that this process of consolidation may go on a little longer. When we then think about silver, it's more of a mix between industrial and precious metals, so it has been a little steadier. And then platinum prices were up about $20 in here today and pushing on to new highs over the last 6 weeks, and that is much more of an industrial metal relative to gold. Then when we look at the copper price, copper pushed on to new recovery highs again in here today. It is now right in the region of the peak from back in 2018. So there is potential for some consolidation, but I think arguably we've already had it, and that the if it's going to push higher from here, then this is a likely place where we might start to see additional upside. The oil price also steadied in here, but wasn't also able to hold the advance through the end of the day. But if we are moving into a period of synchronized global economic expansion, then that's particularly beneficial for emerging markets. So, when we then think about the performance of countries like Indonesia, the stock market there is at a new recovery high. But this is an example of the kind of chart pattern we see, for example, in Australia. These are all countries that pulled back really very sharply from in response to the pandemic and have recouped a good portion of it, spent months ranging, and then are breaking on the upside. Europe, on aggregate, looks almost exactly the same. But then when we look at countries that have already broken on the upside, well, Japan really stands out. And I think this is particularly relevant because it's occurring against a background of a strong yen. Over the course of the last decade, most of the returns on the stock market have been dependent on a weaker currency, but that is not happening right now. Then, when we look at Taiwan, it's breaking up and out of what was a relatively lengthy range. But much more important than that is the fact that it ranged for 17 years and then broke out. So this looks like a new bull market overall. The KOSPI index in South Korea has also pushed on to new recovery highs and is testing the peak from back in 2018. But again, this is another index I think we do need to get some historical perspective on, because it hit a significant peak in 2008 and then spent an awfully long time ranging in the region of that peak before now breaking higher once more. Some of the other countries that did well to contain the risk from the pandemic but haven't been firing is Vietnam. The index there is still pausing below that psychological 1,000-point level. But if we are moving back into a period of synchronized global economic expansion, then it should be beneficial for all of these countries, and it should help to spur recovery overall. When we then think about where are we in terms of the if we are going to have recovery, and there is potentially upward pressure coming in terms of bonds, because it's not simply that US 10-year treasuries are testing the 1% level, but Australian bonds are also starting to rise here, and they got right up to the 1% level last week and steadied a little in here today. They're also at historic low levels and holding around this 1% level. Then when we look at the 10-year in the UK, well, obviously the UK has got this still rumbling question about which way it's going to jump in terms of its relationship with the EU, and this question too about which way the pound is going to respond versus the dollar. It has been ranging now for basically 4 years. It's towards the upper side of the range over the last 2 years. And there is the question, of course, about supplies of dollars, but also about just what's going to happen in terms of the UK economy. In order to get an idea of what the market thinks, we do need to look at the euro and against the pound. And with that, right in the region of the trend mean and towards the lower side of the range, well, I think what we can just conclude there is that the market is not willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that the UK will compromise on some of its red lines. There is the potential that this is about as high as the pound is going to go, and this, of course, is a big question. From the perspective of a UK investor, then it does raise some important questions. Because if one were to simply think about the domestic stock market, well, if the pound were to go down, then that would clearly benefit the stock market in nominal terms. But of course, that doesn't really matter from a just a local perspective. But then, of course, it would also benefit the kinds of domestic pound-denominated funds that invest overseas. So, for example, the India Trust is continuing to rebound. It has, I think, been underperforming the Aberdeen India Fund. So, I think that's rather interesting that the JP Morgan Investment Trust has been underperforming by really quite a wide margin, and the Aberdeen New India Investment Trust is coming up to test its highs. Meanwhile, if the pound were to devalue, it would certainly help the performance relative to the Nifty, which has pushed on to new all-time highs in here this or today. Thought it was also interesting. There were a number of articles talking about the outlook for Tata Motors and luxury car demand in China. Czech and Slovak, Czech, Czech or the Czech Republic and Slovakia both depend on automotive companies for a large proportion of their economies, and they're running at capacity because of demand for luxury vehicles. Well, Jaguar and Land Rover, which is owned by Tata Motors, is ramping up production there in response to demand from China. And Tata Motors is starting to firm now. Now, this is again the third time in 2 years that it has been able to push back above the trend mean, and there has been a consistent sequence of lower rally highs now for the last 4.5 years. So it's a big question whether this move back above the trend mean can be sustained. But if it can push back above the 200 level, well, then it will have broken the downtrend, and there is the potential that the worst is in fact over. Of course, Tata Motors has been one of the worst performing Indian shares over the last few years against a background where the wider market is at new all-time highs. Then we have the performance of Yes Bank, which was one of the bigger private sector lenders, and it is just about holding on, but trading hasn't occurred over the last 2 days. So there's the potential here that some of these companies are going to be wound up, or they're going to be folded into some of the larger state-owned companies. Because when we look at the performance of some of those state-owned banks, well, they've all bounced. And the Bombay Banks Index, which has classically been a leader overall, is now pushing up in a dramatic fashion back up towards the peaks. So it's not leading and it's not pushing on to new all-time highs, but it is at least performing in line with the market. The other significant lead indicator that would be really comforting for Japan investors is the Second Section Index, and it hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs either. Think it's also worth highlighting that Bitcoin was up another $800 in here, well, $900 in here today, cruising through the 16,000 level, really very clearly outperforming now and pushing on towards the peak from back in late 2017. This looks like a significant consolidation that is in the process of being completed. As Bitcoin continues to do well, it is likely to stoke demand for altcoins. So, the Ethereum price was up $20 in here today and firming from the $450 area. And I do think that there is potential here that we're going to get a high beta move in a manner similar to what we have tended to see with silver when gold prices tend to start attract interest. So there's increasing amounts of good news and enthusiasm about the outlook for growth. The questions, of course, are going to arise about what's going to happen in terms of interest rates and what's going to happen in terms of the willingness of governments to continue to spend to try and get people back to work. It looks increasingly likely that they're going to run economies hot in order to stoke inflation. So inflation is not a near-term risk, but it is a medium-term risk because it is the clear desire of governments to create an inflationary bias. And it's that medium-term outlook is what's helping to support gold at these levels, even though ETF buying has not been as aggressive of late. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.